Welcome back, everyone. And contrary to popular belief, Soundproof does still exist. I'm still Brendan Lewis. I go by Mr. BDog46 on the internet, and I am still joined, believe it or not, by Jake Mueller, who goes by Major Bowman on the internet. And before we get started here, as we are very excited to get back, and we do have a lot to talk about, Jake is going to issue a public service announcement. So please pause for a moment here.
Yeah, sorry, y'all. Like, I really wanted to put podcasts out the last few weeks, but Brendan was just refusing. He was being, you know, a bit of a diva. We had to work out something in our contracts, and, you know, basically it just came down to me forfeiting all my profits and giving them to him. Mm-hmm. So these are the sacrifices I am making for you people.
Yep, that's exactly how it happened. We spent a little bit of time in court, but ultimately we were
able
to...
No, on the real, though, I got, like, super busy with grad school stuff, and then I just kind of needed a week off. And so... that ended up being a couple off. So last week was mostly because I had a really big event at work that I couldn't really miss. And so I just spent a lot of time doing that. Anyway, basically, it's my fault.
It is Jake's fault. That's exactly what I wanted him to say. And I'm going to cut him off there before he gets the opportunity to explain himself anymore. But long story short, we try on this podcast to make school coming first not just a cliche. And we really do live by that. And Jake, being the student that he is, decided to abandon you all. So that said, we are here with episode 17 this week.
I'm being villainized.
We did take you know, quite a bit of time off, and we did have some very important happenings over the time that we had off, including an international championship, and I believe just one regional, as well as the Puerto Rico special event / U.S. local, depending on how you look at it. So we're going to talk about all those events. We've got Ladder for you guys, even though it's kind of a mishmash of Series 2 and Series 3. What are Series 2 and Series 3? Does that mean anything to you yet? Well, it will by the end of this podcast, if it doesn't. And, of course, we will talk about our Dash 17 Pokemon right now, actually. So let's dive into
now.
That, and we'll then move on with our more competitive-oriented content. But, of course, number 17, having talked about Pidgey a month ago, we are on to Pidgeotto, which is, you know, the first bird line that launched along several decades of forgettable early route bird lines.
Pidgeotto, like, my the thing I remember Pidgeotto by the most was Faulkner having like a level 9 win
in
the first gym in Gold and Silver. It's like, how does he do that? He must be cheating.
Yeah.
Like, I don't...
Also, Ash catches one like immediately.
Pidgeotto? I thought he caught a Pidgey.
No, he catches a Pidgeotto.
Oh.
Yeah, he catches it somehow. He like can't catch a Rattata, and then he's like, oh, there's a Pidgeotto. Let me just catch this bad boy. And then it evolves, and it leaves immediately. Like, it finally evolves into Pidgeot after, like, being with him for this entire season, and then it goes to, like, watch over the forest or some nonsense like that. But anyway, number 117, our second Kanto Pokemon of the week, is Seadra. And I think we talked about it a little bit last time, but this is a line that Jake and I both like, and I think for different reasons.
I like them aesthetically. I think they're really neat. Mm-hmm. I think they did a good job with, like, the designs for all three of them, and I think the progression from one to the other is really cool. Mm-hmm. And they also have really good shinies.
They are purple, I believe, if I recall. Jace, a big fan of the Kingdra's purple shinies.
Purple. Seadra's, like, a dark, deeper blue with, like, some red highlights, I think.
Oh, okay.
And Horsea's, like, a green.
But, yeah, it's a cool line. I think Kingdra was, like, necessary to really make it into what it is. But yeah, it's a cool line. 217, as we dive into Johto, is Ursaring this week. And I feel like I talked about this, and it's funny that they both happen to be bear Pokemon. But as it pertains to what's Cubchoo and what's the Beartick. Where both of them seem kind of like under-designed to me, and then they were like, okay, we have to give it something defining. We'll put a ring on its belly and then name it after that. So if we have this like generic looking bear, and now it has a ring on its name, so that's gonna, or on its belly, that's gonna be its thing.
No, I can't disagree. It's always been kind of like almost like a disappointment. Like, they could have done some cooler things with it, but it's really plain, and it's just like normal typing, which doesn't really seem like it should fit with a bear.
Right.
But I don't know. It's not bad, but it's not. Like, it's not exciting either.
You know, one thing I did like about Ursaring, though, is it's one of those Pokemon that felt like it had, like, a competitive, like a competitive function in mind when it was designed, that they've kind of stuck with over the generation, where it got Guts and then what is it called, Quick Feet. So it like has this like design from very early on that's based on like getting status and then doing a lot of damage after that. So I do kind of respect that. A lot of Pokemon, they just like when abilities started to launch in Generation 3, they just kind of like threw something at it and there was no really like competitive thought to it. But Ursaring seems to have had that from the get-go.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Speaking of Generation 3 and Pokemon that don't really do anything... Swalot is number 317, and I mean, sure, it's a Pokemon that exists. It's purple, so Jake can't hate it too much, but
I was about to say that. No, I mean, it's like, it's okay. It's it was just one of those Pokemon that like a bunch of NPCs had in Ruby and Sapphire, and then you'd like be there without much issue and moved on.
You earthquake it.
It was, and then... yeah. Like, oh, okay, I guess that was not hard at all.
Right, it's one of those things that has a lot of HP and it evolves early, yeah. So it's kind of annoying for like 10 minutes while you're playing through the game. But other than that, nothing to write home about. Number 417, man, what an interesting Pokemon. The Pokemon being Pachirisu, which is just like an incredibly important Pokemon as it pertains to the history of VGC. Like, incredibly important.
It's become like a buzzword at this point. Like, oh, this is the next Pachirisu, or like, well, if Seijin can win with Pachirisu, I can win with anything.
Right.
Like, which is, like, good in some aspects, really annoying in others.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think it was good because, like, the use of it really... It gave VGC, like a spotlight where it didn't really have one other than that, but also it enabled an entire group of people that often don't like contribute a lot as far as like, you know, metagame discussion and metagame development, and
or even like showing up to tournaments.
I feel kind of like winning with your favorites is like a nice idea and all, but doesn't really work out.
Right.
And Pachirisu is like the direct antithesis to that idea, which is why it's like kind of annoying. But anyway, number 517 is Muna. I feel nothing about Muna. I don't know if you do, but...
Yeah, I don't either. Like, it's kind of cute, and I like Musharna, but Muna itself...
Yeah, there was...
A floral print Pokemon.
It did have this interesting thing, because I think it was in the Generation 1 games, there was an NPC that talked about a pink Pokemon with flowers on it or something like that.
Oh, that sounds familiar,
which didn't exist at the time. So people will talk all the time about how, like, Muna has been in development since, like, Gen 1 launched, and how Gen 1, like, basically pointed at Muna even though it didn't exist for, like, over a decade later and stuff like that. So it's kind of interesting in that regard. But purely from a Pokemon perspective, I could do without it. 617 is Excelgor, which is just one of the most maddening Pokemon to play against.
I think it's really cool design-wise. Yeah, no, it's really annoying to face, but I, like, design-wise, I think it's really, really cool. Like, it has, aesthetically, it looks exactly how it should, as far
definitely
as, like, how its
that.
Stats are
like,
set up and how
it... think speed, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, even in the lore, it's like a ninja, and it looks kind of like ninja-esque with the little headband that kind of ties around the back. Mm-hmm. But I think it's neat. Like, when I was playing through Gen 5, and I found out that Excelgor doesn't evolve from Karrablast, I was, like, shocked. And I think we've talked about this already,
but
they did that line and like the interaction with the Excavalier line is really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. Really interesting the way that they set that up. And I was going to say, like, that's exactly what they want you to think, Jake. They got you.
I know, yeah.
But it's cool. Yeah, it's like the knight and the ninja, and they sort of like switch places as they evolve, which is neat. Number 717 is a Pokemon that's very near and dear to my heart and has been basically the sole force that keeps me interested in restricted formats, like, since they've existed. Well, since I started playing anyway, so both 2016 and 2020. But that is Yveltal.
Yay.
Which, to me, has, like, the most fun playstyle of any of the restricted Pokemon. And it's really annoying to make it work sometimes because Xerneas is always so good, but it's right. really cool, and I enjoy playing it.
No, I do too. I think in a restricted format where like everything moves super quickly, I think Yveltal is really good at slowing things down, and that's why I like to play it. And like we've talked multiple times about the team we took to NAIC in 2019 with Yveltal, so both of us are pretty big fans of it.
Good team. Goodmon too. And the final Pokemon is, if I were to rank all nine of the new starter Pokemon, this comes in at ninth, and it is Drizzile, which is just kind of like an abomination of a Pokemon.
It's like the angsty teen of Pokemon.
What's the name of, like, it's Rowlet and Dartrix.
Dartrix.
It was like, hey, everybody loved Dartrix. Why don't we make it again, but make it a water type
lizard?
They
gave it like the emo quaff in the hair.
Yeah, Dartrix had that, like, too, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, I loved Sobble, and I picked Sobble when I first played through Sword and Shield, and then it evolved, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, and,
no.
And I mean, like, even
then
Inteleon,
it evolved again, and I was like, why? Let's go back to Sobble.
I think Inteleon has some redeeming qualities, but only as it compares to Drizzile. all right, so those are our 17s. We'll get back to you in 2 weeks with the 18s, and we'll get to talk about not Drizzile anymore, but Inteleon. Which is getting a gun soon, so that's exciting. You've got that to look forward to. I was laughing so hard when that design was released. I can't even explain it to you. Like, it just has a gun. Oh my god. Okay. The ladder this week. There are a lot of hidden teams apparently.
Yeah. No, we got 10 teams, but it took 21 tries, so it's a little bit more than we've seen in the past. It's getting into crunch time. We've got majors coming up every few weeks or so.
And majors that just completed as well, which I'm sure is a factor.
Right.
Is the teams that laddered up to the high 1900s and haven't decayed all the way yet.
Yeah. As Brendan said, these are likely some Series 2 teams still mixed in. And we were recording this on March 5th, and Series 3 started on March 1st. So it's going to be really hard. It would have been like extremely difficult to like weed through until we found teams that we knew were Series 3. And so,
well, and there's
we just
no way
took
to
what
even,
we got.
There's not even a way to prove it, because there are a lot of, you know, Series 2 teams that can be viably run in,
right,
in
yeah.
Series 3. But anyway, we'll jump into it too. The first team on the ladder is a team of Galar Darmanitan, which we have to specify now because we can use regular Darmanitan, Whimsicott, Kinkelder, Bronzong, Dracovish, and Duraludon.
This kind of seems like a week one team. Like, I haven't really seen Darm in a really long time, and Dracovish strikes me as like a very early format mon, even though it just won a major.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's kind of tough to call Dracovish a week one mon anymore, and also Darmanitan kind of like, it was a week one mon, but then it kind of had a resurgence for a little bit after Seijin won the Invitational.
Yeah.
But I think that Darm usage is very much tied to Dragapult usage, and there was one Dragapult in cut of Collinsville. Shout out to Mora. The second team on the ladder this week is somebody who really liked that 2018 Gengar Komo-o team.
That's what I was going to say.
And it is a team of Gengar, Clefairy, Draco Zoltz, Phalanx, Komo-o, and Indeedee.
This is...
because reasons.
Like, horrid. Like, not horrid isn't like a bad team, but horrid isn't, I would like never want to play against
it. It hurts
this.
My eyes.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I see what it's doing. Like, I don't know if it's like Clangor or Soul Como on this team or something, but like, you'd imagine Phalanx has no retreat, and Dracozolt is like a very strong Pokemon.
Yep.
It does have very similar elements to that 2018 team, like Gengar, Clef, Como, and then you have another follow me mon. Double follow me means that probably has to be Clangor's Soul, right?
I would think so. I think there are probably multiple setup options with Phalanx and Como, and then you basically get two shots at redirecting, you know, whatever your chosen sweeper is for the game. So you can kind of like visualize how the team works, but dear God, it hurts to look at. The third team on the ladder this week is Dusclops, Dragapult, Milotic, Ferrothorn, Mimikyu. That's three ghost types and an Arcanine.
I don't really get the point of Dusclops on like non-super hard TR teams. Like, I think it fits really well on those teams that really want Trick Room up consistently. But if you take a team like this, Dusclops just seems kind of out of place, because even if you get Trick Room up, like, what's taking advantage of it? Ferrothorn, which we all know is terrible.
Yeah.
Or like,
I mean, 50% of the time, Jake, Dusclops works every time. That's an ally switch joke.
Okay, yeah.
I mean,
I don't even consider that.
Annoyingly, it seems kind of like that's standard on Dusclops right now, which to me is kind of bizarre, because I think it has like four moveslot syndrome even without factor in right. ally switch.
No, it really does.
But yeah, it seems to be something that's kind of risen in popularity even is Dusclops. I don't know if it's being used as to, like a way to reverse Trick Room because Hard Trick Room itself doesn't handle Dusclops very well. Yeah. So you can kind of sit it in front of Hard TR and do stuff like that. You know, Will-O-Wisp takes on Rhyperior very well. You can reset the Trick Room. Obviously, Ally Switch is really nice for, you know, like forcing 50-50s to potentially burn turns where you're not in a great offensive position or extend your own offense. So, I mean, like, it's a good enough mon that I don't hate it, but it seems to be a mon that's more closely identified with Hard Trick Room.
Yeah, for sure.
The fourth team on the ladder this week is Rotom Heat, Tyranitar, Venusaur, Hitmontop, Corviknight, and Gastrodon.
This is like one of the few we can clearly identify as a Series 3 team because that Venusaur.
Does have a Venusaur.
But I've heard like really good things about Venusaur. I think I know a lot of people are big fans of it. Earth Power is a huge buff for it. Sleep is really, really good right now because we don't have like terrains anymore.
Right.
And like people haven't really caught on to the Lumberry wave yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a big fan of Venusaur. I think this team is pretty neat. So what was that?
I said I'm glad you said that and not me because I thought we were gonna have to fight about Weezing, but because you said it, then it's fine.
I mean, I can love a Pokemon aesthetically and like still accept that it's not very good.
Okay, that's fair.
But yeah, I think this is neat. The sand kind of clashes with what I would have presumed is a sash on Venusaur, so maybe it's not. And I don't really like the apparent lack of speed control other than like Tailwind Corviknight, but I don't really think that's a good set either.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it looks kind of like a good...
Yeah.
It looks like a decent like balance type of team.
Yep, I think that's exactly what they went for. And given the dearth of grass types that existed in Series 2, I think Venusaur slots pretty well onto a lot of balanced teams. Because grass being such a good typing, we saw like certain periods in the format where Gastrodon and Rotom Wash were like sort of taking over. So Venusaur is kind of a welcome addition to the format in that sense. The next team on the ladder has a lot of elements of Hard Trick Room, but perhaps not all of the sweepers you tend to see. So Dusclops, Butterfree, Rhyperior, Gastrodon, Arcanine, and Indeedee.
If that Arcanine was a Torkoal, it would be like Premier Hard
that
TR. Would,
yeah, definitely. But instead, so it seems like they swap out for a little bit more consistency and not being super reliant on TR. Maybe there's a flowchart that Intimidate factors into.
That's true, yeah. I was going to say, consistency in Hard TR is more about like getting up Trick Room and then winning with Trick Room up. So I don't know if Arcanine contributes to that as much, but like Arcanine Gastrodon is a really good like defensive backbone.
Mm-hmm.
And so like if you want to play that kind of defensive game, you can do that with those two.
And Dusclops contributes to that nicely as well.
Yeah.
The next team on the ladder at 6 is Bravery Mimikyu, which is kind of a core in and of itself. I've seen that quite a few times. And then Togedemaru, Dragapult, Vanillix, and Dracovish.
This is kind of cool. That might be like Policy Dragapult and Shard Vanillix.
That's a cool combination.
Yeah.
It could even
this is
be
kinda neat.
A Policy Braviary.
Yeah, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But like this is a kind of team that I think Dracovish works well on because there's some pretty reliable speed control in either like Tailwind or Nuzzle. And Vanillix can give you like Aurora Veil and checks the water types with Freeze Dry, so kind of cool. Not really something I would have expected to see this. Well, it's kind of this late into the format, but again, this could be like a Series 3 specific. I don't know. It's weird.
But, I don't know. It's a cool 6. I wonder if Braviary makes a little bit of a resurgence. It was very much a week 1 mon when people were sort of expecting Intimidate to still be around. Then it wasn't so much, but now that it is, because... Because he's back.
It's him.
You could definitely expect to see, Milotic was already, good enough. But I guess Braviary falls into that role as well.
Yeah.
The next team on the ladder at our seventh team of the week being Excadrill, Grimmsnarl, Arcanine, Dusclops, Rotom C. And here's one of those Pokemon with a Series 3 buff is Hatterene.
We'll talk about this later. I'm a big G-Max Hatterene fan.
Me too.
But, I think this is a neat team, too. It has, I don't know, like, it has some elements that I like, and then some just don't really seem like they fit. Because, Dusclops, Grimmsnarl, and Hatterene on the same team kind of feels like you're repeating, I'm having a hard time collecting my thoughts about this, because it seems like there was like some kind of direction, and then they just kind of lost their way when they kept going. Because like Grimmsnarl head doesn't even make sense if you're running like fake tears kind of stuff.
Mm.
But like, if you're running Dusclops head ring, you probably have Trick Room. But then the only things that really take advantage of Trick Room are those two on the team. And I don't know.
I kind of see. It seems like there is like, I don't know. There are a couple different ways that it could be going, but then it's missing like the Tyranitar that would bring together like multiple modes or something like that.
Right.
You know, I don't know how to put into words how it seems a little bit disjointed, but it did get to the top of the ladder, so clearly they're doing something correctly. The eighth team is a team featuring our first Incineroar, I believe. Kind of surprising that it took us this long, but of course there are a lot of hidden teams. I'm sure Incineroar's in there somewhere. With Corviknight, Hydreigon, Gardevoir, Toxtricity, because reasons, and Snorlax.
It's probably, I bet it's G-Max Toxtricity.
I mean, sure, but...
but, yeah, because reasons probably still applies.
Yeah.
Toxtricity, I think, like, actually is kind of cool. Like, Overdrive's a really good move. Mm. And, like, Sludge Bomb is good in a format with fairy types. So I don't hate Toxtricity, but this is kind of a neat team. I like Hydreigon as a concept. Like, I feel like Hydreigon's always kind of an underrated Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
Gardevoir, I haven't really seen, like, at all yet.
Yeah, I don't know what that's doing there.
This year at all, so it might be kind of neat. Snorlax has always, not always, like, this year so far has been very underwhelming to me, so you know, maybe Series 3 is its time, but I'd be kind of surprised if it was.
Yeah, I think Snorlax will always kind of be what it is. I think Incineroar is, like, almost a direct nerf to it.
It is, but Incineroar doesn't have knockoff anymore.
Oh, that's true.
So
and also Conkeldurr being way more popular as of late is definitely not something that Snorlax appreciates either.
Yeah.
We're going to get into Team 9 here, which features Incineroar, Dusclops, Lapras, Passimian, Ferrothorn, and Tyranitar. So our second Incineroar and our first Lapras, which is hugely buffed as we go into Series 3.
Yeah, this is what Lapras was waiting for. Aurora Veil, we all know, is stupid good. Setting up Aurora Veil while you do damage that doesn't require hail is even better.
That's insane.
and Lapras, like, one of the best sets with it is Weakness Policy, and you can, like, side activate. I think Light Clay has a place too, but if you're not Weakness Policy, you're struggling to do damage with Lapras, and even if you have Veil up, if you're not doing damage, you're probably still going to get outpaced. I don't really, there's not a way to side activate Policy here unless you're in like Trick Room with Dusclops or something, but
yeah,
a lot of teams you'll see like hit on top with Lapras.
Right, yeah, so there's no like immediate priority activation of it. I know that running things like Togedemaru and Lapras is popular, and Raichu is popular, so you can like Volt Switch off Lapras and then have because otherwise it struggles pretty mightily with Rotom Wash, so that's kind of a neat core to be able to take that on. But it's a cool Pokemon, we'll get into a little bit more later. And this is kind of the second application of Lapras, which, you know, it's still a really good Parish user and can get screens up that definitely increases the defenses of those Parish teams, and they appreciate that more than a lot of teams. The team being Gengar, Lapras, Sandaconda, Gothitelle, Snorlax, and Arcanine.
The only issue with, like, Lapras getting screens up on this team is that if you want your Gengar or Sandaconda to be trapping things, you can't get screens up with Lapras.
Gengar can't yet, Jake.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
This is not DOU. Let's
you act like it's used in DOU. I forgot there were, like, the four that weren't legal yet, and Gengar was one of them. Anyway, if you want to trap with Sandaconda's G-Max move, you can't resonance with Lapras, which is probably fine. Like, you have Gothitelle still. But this is kind of what Lapras was seen doing most in Series 2, was, like, perishing on this kind of team, which is kind of cool.
Right. Yeah, I think when you see Gothitelle, you immediately start to think about Perish, so... That's definitely what that's doing, but we're going to jump here into our live results. So again, just to kind of sum up, sort of a mixed bag from the ladder this week. There's a lot of stuff we've seen, some new stuff. You can kind of tell what are definitely Series 3 teams, but you can't necessarily tell if everything's a Series 3 team. The meta is still very young. I know, you know, there were a lot of really high-profile players that were playing in Collinsville, and as a result, maybe weren't even playing Series 3, so the meta development may be a little bit behind. But there are a lot of locals this weekend, so we'll probably get some more interesting data on that as we go forward here. But anyway, let's round up our Series 2 major events. There were two of them since our last podcast, the Oceania International Championships and the Collinsville Regional, which was last weekend. I think there were some really interesting things at Oceania in particular, because there were a lot of things that I would call, you know, standard meta stuff that I was expecting to see, and you kind of see, you know, teams like that. I think the winning team by Marco Silva looks a lot like that. You know, some of the teams with the Togekiss, Arcanine, Rotom, Conkeldurr cores, you see a lot of that. But also, yeah, there were multiple Gorgeist in cut.
That was so cool.
Gengar Bisharp took over. You know, there was a resurgence of Sylveon, which is not something that I necessarily would have considered as good as it, you know, showed up to be at this event. So I thought it was a really, really interesting event.
Yeah, like one thing I want to point out immediately is that in top 16, there were two teams that didn't have Togekiss, mm-hmm, which is crazy. Like, Togekiss is insanely good. And even if you go all the way down through top 32... from 17 to 32, there's only one team that doesn't have Togekiss. Mm-hmm. So, like, 29 of 32,
it's insane,
top teams had Togekiss.
That's ridiculous. And people are complaining about Incineroar usage. Like, let's step back for a moment.
Like, but notably, like, the winning team was one of the three that didn't.
Right. But it had two other fairies, so it's a tough stack after a while.
Right. It had two other fairies and Rotom Heat, which is, like, one of the hardest Kiss counters out there. So, like, clearly he was ready for it. Marco's team is pretty neat. I really didn't expect to see Dracovish do well at a major like this.
Me neither.
I think most of us had written it off as kind of like a one-off.
I just thought Gastrodon had basically invalidated it.
Well, I mean, it even played against a Gastrodon in the finals.
And won, yep.
Yeah. So, like, clearly still doing something right. You mentioned Gorgeist. I think Gorgeist was really cool this tournament. It stacks up pretty well against a lot of pretty common things, like Dracovish being one of them. The Conkeldurr being another one. Conkeldurr. I need to stop saying Conkeldurr. Conkeldurr being another one. One of the coolest moments I've ever seen on stream was in Raghav's top four match when
he side
trick-or-treated. That was so good. Blake was over at my house while we were watching that set, and we popped off. Like, we immediately messaged Raghav, and we were like, oh my god, that was so cool. That was amazing.
Yeah, it's a really cool Pokemon, and I think that it's like super interesting that it was sort of like approached independently by two separate team building groups.
Yeah.
I know that Eduardo Cunha, who was did play second at the event, had been playing around with it for quite a while. He was using it on stream, and I'm not sure this was the exact six that he was using at the time, but it's definitely similar. I know there are a lot of players that, you know, pretty heavily favor the use of Dynamax weakness policy Tyranitar. And I think Eduardo is probably the best at playing that. He's like, he knows all the defensive calcs, you know, utilizes Pokemon to, you know, mitigate damage and activate that. But anyway, that Pokemon, Tyranitar being what it is, being able to trick or treat and set Trick Room with Gorgeist is like an incredible partner for it.
Yeah, definitely. The trick or treat giving you that fighting immunity is huge. You could, like, side Seed Bomb when you're in Dynamax, which would do very little damage and pop your weakness policy, which is really neat. And I think Raghav also had policy on his Tyranitar, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, and then you can even trick-or-treat opponents so that Tyranitar is hitting for super effective damage with Max Darkness. That. So definitely a really cool Pokemon. Again, as it pertains to Series 3, maybe one of the Pokemon that gets hit the hardest by the existence of of both Venusaur and Incineroar, both Pokemon that it doesn't really like to see all that much, and it doesn't hit Lapras very hard either. But for what it was, it's definitely cool to see a Pokemon like that, you know, kind of take the stage by storm. I think the other story of Top Cut was that Gengar Bisharp team, which Nahal proudly mentioned that he stole from Showdown, and I think
that was one of the most epic interviews on stream we've ever had.
He just dropped bombs up there on stream without regard. But I think it's pretty well known at this point that the team was built by Case Victory, and he was the person that passed it to several people that were at the event, and I don't think Nahal was one of them, which is why it's kind of funny.
Right.
But obviously a very strong team. Case, you know, a really well-known team builder that has been really influential on a lot of VGC metagames, and this is definitely no exception, as it placed twice in the top eight here.
Yeah, it's neat. I think, like, in concept, Bisharp makes a lot of sense in this team because you have, like, Kiss, Gengar, Arcanine, Rotom all faster than it. You can double up with Assurance, and then Conkeldurr, you can even, like, Mach Punch Assurance combo stuff.
Right.
Icy Wind Gengar makes sense in this team because you have, like, Togekiss and Bisharp that are, you know, just fast enough that they can take advantage of Icy Wind against a lot of the top threats. Mm-hmm. It's a good step. I liked how Nahal was playing the team on stream, because it, like, he kind of showed off how it looks like a really offensive team at first. Mm-hmm. But he played it in such a way that it gave him, like, flexible defensive options too. So, definitely. Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, it was impressive to see it piloted by him and by Brady, who I think played mm-hmm. really well in his stream matches as well. Just some of the highlights as we will kind of summarize some of the things going on in all 64 teams which receive CP. I think one team that was on stream a couple times was the team that was piloted by Alfredo Chang Gonzalez, and I think Oe was running it as well. Oliver Escalin, which was the Inteleon team with Togekiss and Chandelure, Rotom, Moe, Conkeldurr, and Grimmsnarl. I thought that was a really cool team, and probably my favorite take on Inteleon that I've seen so far.
Yeah, it looks neat. I'm a fan as well. Inteleon, like, it, I feel like it slots onto teams better than people give it credit for, because
definitely, yeah.
Like, having something that fast with some pretty decent coverage, like Water Ice Flying, mm-hmm. is pretty strong coverage. Especially when you're that fast and you can do, like, really fast max air streams.
Yep.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I think especially with Fake Tears support, like, you can just get gunned down, pun intended, just from turn one if you're not, you know, packing some way to try and handle that offensive combination. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing I wanted to point out. There is an Umbreon Salazzle Weezing team that's in 14, so we love to see that. Jake's a Weezing fan.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Salazzle as a competitive Pokemon, so I think that's cool. A lot of standard stuff as we go through the top 64 with some cool Pokemon here and there, but we're not going to spend too much more time highlighting that, so we can get into Collinsville, which had some interesting storylines. It was won by Andrew Ding, who was, yep. I think, if he wasn't running a direct paste of that Lucamere team, it's definitely very close with a team that it's like the I think people have been calling it like Durant Control or something like that, that features Gothitelle to kind of set up offensive pins, and then has Tyranitar Milotic, which we saw give Wolf a ton of trouble on stream, and then Sylveon and Arcanine.
That Milotic was huge in that finals match. Like, as soon as he got a couple coils up, it was, like, not game over immediately, but it was pretty close.
yeah.
Like, Milotic was super hard for Wolf's team to break. And
definitely. And I think you kind of saw, and I believe he mentioned this in one of his interviews on stream, that one of his answers to that was Max Lightning Reuniclus.
Yeah,
it's really tough for that to be your answer to, like, Sleep Spam and Milotic in particular, when Durant and Tyranitar are the primary Dynamax Pokemon on the
right.
team.
If I recall correctly, I don't even think Reuniclus gets Thunderbolt. Like, I think you have to run Thunder.
he was running Thunder. I couldn't speak to whether or not it gets Thunderbolt off the top of my head, but I thought that was really interesting as a game plan. And as far as teams go, I really do think that outside of Bingji's team, which we'll get to in a minute, that the team building group of Wolf and Justin Karras and Aaron Traylor, you know, continues to be a story in this format as they've taken a first and second place in both events that they've attended so far.
And both the U.S. regionals so far we've had in 2020, which is, you know, certainly impressive. A lot of times if you strike gold with one team, like at one point in the format,
it's hard to repeat.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, between the three of them, they're all good players and obviously all good team builders. So if you give them all a good team, odds are one of them is going to succeed, and that's certainly what happened here with Wolf.
Definitely, and I thought there were some really cool things that were going on in their team. Of course, they are utilizing that, the copycat trick room. I don't want to call it an exploit, so I guess, like, interaction that you can use with Liepard. So just to describe that to you, because I know there were a lot of people that didn't know it existed until this team ended up doing well over the weekend.
Yeah.
If you Dynamax a Trick Room user and you use Max Guard coming off of Trick Room and then you copycat that, it will set Trick Room up. So that was definitely a tool that was available in their arsenal, and this is, you know, definitely the most unique take on hard Trick Room that I've seen in this format.
Yeah, I think Reuniclus is a really good partner for that kind of thing as well, because Reuniclus wants to max because it's, like, honestly really strong. Mm-hmm. And if you max and set Max Mindstorm, then you get, you know, I guess if you're max guarding the first, you'll get one Mindstorm in terrain. But even after you're done maxing, you still have a few turns of Psychic and terrain. But, like, you have to Trick Room before you can max. So kind of taking advantage of that little mechanic is super nice for that kind of team. And then Rhyperior, we already know, is like a really good
Trick
Room Pokemon. Definitely. Yeah.
I think the other interesting thing about Reuniclus is they were running Focus Blast, so that you could kind of combo with like Max Knuckle plus Rhyperior or Max Knuckle plus Mimikyu to set up damage. So that was cool. Yuri with a new take on Durant team, which is really interesting. Three electric weaks in a Durant plus Raichu. So Raichu is kind of a cool Pokemon. It looks like he's built a house of cards with a lot of reliance on Lightning Rod. But it's always cool. I think Yuri said he's like 3 for 3 in cuts at NA regionals that he's been to or something ridiculous like that. So let's step up here, folks.
I know.
Alex Arand has cut Collinsville every time he's attended it, which is really interesting because I'm not sure how many other events he's attended, but he like cuts this with regularity, and I don't know what else he's cut, like what other cuts he has.
I don't think he has any other regional cuts,
which is fascinating.
Yeah. His home, he's a Chicago player, so it's kind of his home regional.
Gotcha.
Which is kind of cool.
And then rounding out the top eight here was Alberto Lara, who is unquestionably one of the best players in the U.S. right now, as he just is just like cuts everything.
Hopefully he remembered his Cynamax candy this time around.
I think he did. Yeah. I didn't hear that he didn't. And of course, we did allude to it a little bit, but Bingji, who always is bringing the heat to the events that he goes to, has a team that's featuring Seismitoad and Toxtricity, which is an interesting pairing.
I have no idea what that team is doing. That's another one of those, like...
You're not supposed to, Jake. That's how
I know, exactly. You're not supposed to, and you see it in team preview, and you're like, oh God, what do I do? Like, I wouldn't know what Seismitoad does here.
Yeah, definitely not. It was on stream, and, you know, it does that thing where it can kind of, you know, set up rain for itself.
Yeah.
You know, being a water ground type, which is historically strong typing... can do all sorts of stuff like that. And then it's one of the best users, in my opinion, of Max Ooze. And you see that there are a couple of really strong special attackers on Bingji's team. I think notably Toxtricity and Chandelure are both Pokemon that like to stay out of Dynamax and spam their, you know, spread special attacks. So Ooze obviously lends itself to that very well. So kind of a cool team there. And Bingji obviously playing extremely well in the 2020 format right now, has a cut streak going on. Himself, and then we'll hit some of the highlights here in top 16, as there's a lot of interesting stuff going on. I say interesting in air quotes, just so we're clear here. Ashen is running a team featuring Delmize, which is kind of cool,
and the second Raichu of Top Cut as well.
There's a second Raichu on his team as well. I think that Daniel Thorpe at ninth is kind of a set of Pokemon that doesn't look too interesting, but I recall seeing the paste and thinking that he was running a lot of wacky sets.
Yeah, it was Mystical Fire, Mystical Breaking Fire, Swipe, Charizard.
Yeah.
It was Acid Armor, Gastrodon.
He had Sash on his, what's it called? The Darmanitan, I think. I don't believe it was a Charizard.
No, it was Scarf.
Was it Scarf?
Yeah, it was Scarf Ice Punch.
Oh, which... okay. All right. Well, I read something wrong.
I'm pretty
sure
it's Scarf.
Pretty interesting team, definitely. Yeah. I thought that the take on Charizard was really cool. I'm not sure how other people feel about it, but I thought it was cool. Gary Chan has come out of retirement again. I'm not sure if he's ever like actually gone into retirement, but he always has really cool teams.
Yeah.
He's a really big fan of the Flygon line. I don't think he's ever cut an event with Vibrava, but he's definitely known for using Trapinch and Flygon in the past, and he did cut the event with a Trapinch alongside Roserade and Sirfetch'd, so that was definitely something. And then there is what looks like Pledges at 15.
Yep.
With Inteleon and...
Silvally.
Silvally, yeah. And then really cool to see was that A-Drive cut his first regional... which is awesome, and he's got a Colossal team, which is kind of like his signature competitive Pokemon at this point, so it's neat to see him in cut with it.
Yeah, no, he's been using Colossal for a little while now. He used it at that doubleheader we were at in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So cool to see that do well. We're both big Colossal fans.
Love Colossal.
So we're happy to see it succeed. We like really wanted to run Colossal in the latest international challenge online.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized it was still Series 2 and we couldn't use Gigantamax. So we were very sad.
Yeah, I just didn't get the Mons together in time, to be
that
honest.
That too.
I would have still run it. Instead, I ran my trash Dallas team. But anyway, we're going to go to our last live event here, which was the first quote-unquote major of Series 3. There were a lot of invaders from the U.S. that kind of, like, placed all over this top
Well, to be fair, they were still in the U.S.
Wait, what?
They're in Puerto Rico, which is
still
the U.S.
Yeah, right, but they still had to travel. Cause, like, they still had to get on a plane to get there.
What if they took a boat, Brendan?
Did they take a boat, Jake? Is that the hill you want to die on? But anyway, the event was won by James Eakes, who I believe is a California player.
Yeah.
And there were two New York players in Sohaib and Pedons that were in cut of the event. So three Incineroar in the top four is all on kind of like good stuff looking teams. So I think we'll see quite a bit of that over the course of
those three
of the
Incineroar
format.
Were also paired with Togekiss, Tyranitar, Excadrill. Like right. All three of them had those four Pokemon. Yep. And then two of them shared Rotom Cut, two of them had Kinkelder, and then the other two had Water types in that last slot. So some similarities there, which is kind of cool.
Definitely not something that's going to be uncommon, I think, over the course of the format.
Right.
I think that we'll see that quite a bit. The OCIC winning team is sitting at fifth. There is a Gigalith in fourth place, which is kind of an interesting Pokemon that I'm not sure has been getting the usage that maybe it deserves, given, you know, some of the hard Trick Room that is around. It's probably a little bit better than it gets credit for. Not good. Not good. I'm not calling it good. I know Jake was getting ready to lay into me, but I think
a little
bit better than
I actually like
Gigalith.
I'm a fan. I think it does some cool stuff that Tyranitar doesn't.
Yep.
I think like being better against hard Trick Room is certainly one of the things that it does well.
For
if you get one curse up, you're smaller than the not small. I said smaller. Slower than Torkoal if you curse once, which is really good against Trick Room teams. What
I
say smaller?
Curse is a cool niche for it. Small. At
small
sixth
rock.
Place, there is a team with Venusaur and Incineroar, so somebody was prepared. For Series 3 here. Pedon's running his, I don't want to say patented, but I know he's been running it for all of Series 2 with kind of his goth Lapras stuff that features a Passimian this time. And then finally a team that is kind of cut from the same mold as those first couple that we mentioned with the Tyranitar, Excadrill, Togekiss, and Incineroar Core featuring a Rotom and a Dragapult. So that's your early look at teams that were able to cut a format with a very underdeveloped metagame. So we'll look to see some changes for that over the next couple of weeks. All right, so that is going to wrap up our coverage of, well, not quite. I think we'll talk about Series 2 in a little bit, but definitely most of our Series 2 coverage as we get ready to talk about what's going on in Series 3 and give you a little bit of a primer for that. Talk about what we think is good, what we already know is good. But stay tuned for just a couple minutes because we will be right back with more of Soundproof and specifically Series 3 coverage. So stay tuned. Welcome back, everyone. Whether or not you love or hate Incineroar, hopefully you hate it because we can't be friends if you love it, we are going to talk about Series 3 here. So we figured, you know, we wanted to give at least a little bit of a primer and talk about some of our thoughts, some of the things that, you know, are all but confirmed to be good in Series 3. As it did just start, we're going into our first set of locals with it this weekend. So this is a, you know, relatively fresh format, although I think we will see a lot of returning faces. And that said, we did want to discuss a couple of the things that we thought were good in Series 2, why they were good, and potentially whether or not they'll carry over into Series 3. So this is kind of like a very broad scope discussion about a couple of important Pokemon, a couple of, you know, maybe team constructions or cores that were important. And then, you know, what it means for Series 3. So, let's get into it here. Jake.
Hi.
So our list of things that we have here does start off with Togekiss. And I think there's no better example of that than the OCIC cut.
Yeah, that was kind of crazy. Like, of everything in, like we mentioned earlier, Day 2 of OCIC had 32 teams, and 29 of them had Togekiss.
Insane.
Togekiss, like, it found such a good niche in this format because it has three pretty strong max moves. Like, Max Airstream is almost indisputably the best one, I would say. And Togekiss gets a really big buff from that because Air Slash is at the very lowest end of the 130 power bracket. So even though it's like a base 75 move, it still gets that 130 max power. Starfall is really good because if you, you know, have a teammate that doesn't want to get statused, that's strong. It's really good against stuff like Dragapult. And even if you Starfall the partner, if they like Draco your partner or something, it's going to do less damage. And then Max Flare is like insanely good coverage for Togekiss if you're hitting like steel types. So Togekiss has like really good coverage with those max moves. It takes really good advantage of those max moves because it's in a pretty good speed tier. Like when you're at plus one with Togekiss, you're outspeeding pretty much everything relevant. And then it still has that kind of support option with Follow Me when you're not maxed. Super Luck with Scope Lens became like standard, and I used to hate like Scope Lens Kartana. I never respected as a real set, but I like Scope Lens Super Luck Togekiss. I think is one of the best Pokemon formats. Yeah, like 50% chance to crit your max moves when you have three chances at it is crazy. And if you're consistently critting these high power moves, you're doing a lot of damage.
Right. To me, I think the thing that you mentioned about it, you kind of said it as an aside, but it also having a supportive option is like one of the most ridiculous things.
Yeah.
That not only can you be one of the most relevant attackers in the format, not only can you support your team by being a relevant attacker, but also you can just not max, let something else do it, and redirect. Like it's
well,
like
there's
absolutely
also, like,
bonkers to think that that is all in one Pokemon.
Yeah, and like you can still run the classic defensive sets. Like we've seen Yawn, like bulky Togekiss. Do kind of okay. I don't think that's its best set anymore, but it is still usable. You still have like Serene Grace Air Slash, and you can combat that with Thunder Wave if you want. It did lose Tailwind, which is kind of a hit to that bulky set, but
it lost Roost too.
Yeah, but no one ever used that in VGC Roost. At least. Yeah.
It does have Morning Sun, so don't complain.
And Life Dew. So,
right. Okay. Okay. So yeah, so Togekiss definitely a really good mon. I think that's unlikely to change, but we'll get into that a little bit later as far as what it does mean for Series 3.
Yeah.
Arcanine, you know, a really interesting Pokemon in the sense that it's one of the few things that can actually mitigate the effects of Togekiss. I think that, you know, while we saw a lot of years Arcanine sort of be outclassed by Incineroar, it did find its niche as a fast Snarl user in a format that has a lot of kind of like mid-speed special attackers that are taking it over.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, 2017 Arcanine was really good, and it was even better, in 2020, because it was one of the fastest things in the format. Like, back in 2017, there were still a lot of things that outsped it. Like, even, like Garchomp is a really good example, another really common Pokemon that outsped and KO'd it at minus one. But now, there really wasn't much that was faster than Arcanine. Like, the best Pokemon in the format, like Togekiss, Excadrill, Tyranitar, like, stuff in that tier is all outsped by Arcanine. And so a fast Will-O-Wisp in a format without Misty Terrain and a fast Snarl in a format with a lot of good special attackers was really good. So like Arcanine, fully deserving the usage it got just because it had so many options. And there's still stuff outside of, you know, like Snarl, Wisp, Fire Move too that, you know, either didn't get much coverage or didn't get much use or just wasn't, you know, explored enough, I think.
Right. I think it has a really interesting niche in being able to handle Durant plus redirection, and it's one of like the few things that can do that without having to like make a trade, potentially depending on how the turn one unfolds. But I think a lot of the times when you're like playing against Durant, you're thinking about like trading Pokemon for Durant or trading Pokemon for the partner Pokemon, and with like spread fire moves, you don't necessarily have to do that, especially next to Intimidate, so you can prevent Durant from potentially taking knockouts. So Arcanine, definitely a really good Pokemon. Whether or not it's going to be the same in Series 3, of course we'll talk about it, but there's a lot of debate around that. But our next, we've got five bullet points here for Series 2, so bear with us, we'll be talking about Series 3 in just a minute. But Pranksters, I think it started out with being just Whimsicott, then all of a sudden people were like, hang on a minute, Fake Tears is good, and hang on, Grimmsnarl gets it too.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a big turning point in the format, and then we got Meowstic and Liepard. So all of a sudden, by the end of Series 2, there are four good and viable Prankster users.
Yeah, Whimsicott was like the main one. I think people were immediately drawn to Prankster Tailwind, and like rightfully so. That with the new speed mechanics, Prankster Tailwind became insanely good, and then people started branching out. You know, Fake Tears was a pretty big, I guess, development in the meta because Prankster Fake Tears.
I think that's fair to say.
Was, you know, it's really good with something like Togekiss or any of the other like relevant special attackers. Dragapult makes great use of it too. Charizard is something we saw win in the first regional in Dallas with Aaron's team. And then, like you said, we started branching out to others. We like Fakture's Grimmsnarl was in top 8 at least twice in Dallas, on the Justin's teams, Karras and Burns and Kruba.
Right.
And then, like you said, we got like Meowstic. Agati got day 2 with Fakture's Meowstic in Brazil. We saw Wolf get 2nd in Collinsville with Fakture's Lightbird. So, you know, when those Pokemon got their prankster abilities through home, definitely started picking up. And I fully agree with that trend. Like I think it's really strong.
Definitely, definitely. You kind of wonder why it wasn't seen more in past years. I think that's a really interesting phenomenon, is whether or not we take what we know now and bring it back to old formats, whether or not it would change things. But that's a long conversation for another day. But as far as other Pokemon, Rotom Wash became extremely influential, I wouldn't say midway, probably towards the latter half of Series 2. It was kind of one of those Pokemon that was like immediately on day one teams.
Yeah.
And then it sort of like fizzled out, and I'm not sure exactly what the development was. I think, you know, Duraludon starting to pop up a little bit more had a lot to do with it. I think Gastrodon raised in usage, and then people were like, why aren't we still running this anyway? Also, it gets Nasty Plot.
Yeah. No, Nasty Plot was like, I think people saw that Rotom got Nasty Plot and kind of overlooked it at first, like, oh, the bulky set's going to be better. And then people started playing with Nasty Plot Rotom Wash and realizing it had, like, really good coverage, and it had really good, well, Max Lightning is good, but not if you're not touching the ground, which is unfortunate. Geyser Ring for yourself is really cool because you can set up Rain and Geyser again. And then, like you said, Gastrodon popped up, but then people started running Dark Pulse, which not only gives you a way to hit Gastrodon, and then like lower its special defense and max darkness and hit it stronger the next time, but it gives you a really good way to hit Dragapult, which was one of the best checks to it. And so that Nasty Plot 3 attacks it with Dark Pulse, I think, is really cool.
Yeah, I think Dark Pulse, I had almost forgotten about that. Not that I'd forgotten about it, but I think it was an important piece of its development in this format.
Yeah.
Because for the reasons you mentioned, and I think also it's kind of one of those Pokemon where like everybody knows what it does, and then all of a sudden you get the option to use Max Darkness.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of things that could previously switch on it that can't anymore.
Right.
Like Gastrodon is going to get too KO'd by Max Darkness.
Yeah.
You know, you could, you know, potentially switch in something like Tyranitar and reset the sand and mitigate the amount of damage, and things like just being able to Max Darkness safely
right.
is like ridiculous, and then be in a stronger position the next turn, regardless of what switches into the Max Darkness.
And even from like outside a coverage perspective, Darkness combos super well with the other moves, just because if you Darkness something, they're going to be at -1 special defense. So like whatever you hit them with next is going to be even better.
Definitely. So super strong Pokemon. And then finally, the last thing in Series 2, of course, this is not comprehensive by any means, but these were kind of like the five things that we thought about that definitely were like influential and defining for Series 3, kind of like throughout the format specifically. This one being Rhyperior, which ended up being a very, very strong Pokemon. It was something that, I'll be honest, I wrote it off immediately. I was like, why would Rhyperior be good?
Yeah.
It's never been good. It's always done the same thing. It's had weakness policy sets like forever and ever, and it's never been good. But Dynamax is so, so good for it.
I'll stand up for Rhyperior for a second. It did win a 2015 regional. That's what Colin won Madison with, and I think Crow got top 4 at Seattle with it right before that.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah,
that was a cool
team.
But anyway, I feel like Rhyperior was one of the first shifts in the metagame. Like, at the very, very beginning, like right when the games came out, people were like messing around with stuff, figuring out what was good, and then people started catching on to like Trick Room with self-procking weakness policy Rhyperior. That was one of the first big things. I know that like super early on in like the very first season of Battle Stadium, Blake gave me a rental team that had like Bronzong Rhyperior, and I was just kind of sweeping teams with just those two. Like, it was really fun to use at the beginning, because it's pretty simple. It's that kind of like early meta thing that, you know, is something new but not like hard to use, and until people caught on, it was really good. But like, even when people caught on, it, you know, it stuck around. Like, we just saw it get second at the last Series 2 regional, so certainly a thing that stood the test of time.
I think that's maybe the thing that was why I kind of wrote it off, is that historically, like, self-activation strategies and stuff like that are not consistent, or I can't like really think of a situation in which, like, I would consider, if you hadn't told me anything about the rest of the format and you showed me Bronzong Rhyperior, I would consider that cheese, like, based on my knowledge of all of the past formats.
Right.
But the fact that it is good, that and that even when people were like prepared for it and knew that it existed, that it continued to influence the format, I think is really cool and one of the reasons why it's so good.
Yeah.
And another thing that I made a little note here is that not only is it like really influential as far as like a mode on Hard Trick Room, people were taking that combination and just smacking it onto the end of like, you know, standard-ish teams.
Right.
So, I think one of the ones that stands out to me is that Shoma in the Invitational ran a rain team, yeah, and just smacked that TR core. Uh-huh. It's like a TR mode in and of itself, and was very successful in that format. So Rhyperior is our fifth series to sort of bullet point here. Now, before we get into talking the things that we think will be good in Series 3, let's talk about the things that are new,
yeah,
in Series 3. And we're going to start out by talking about a lot of the new Gigantamaxes that were released. I know you're all waiting to hear us talk about Incineroar, but you're going to have to wait for a couple of minutes because we're going to talk about cooler things first. So I think anybody that's been playing the format will tell you that the most important new Gigantamax Pokemon is Lapras.
Yeah, I think that's hard to fight. Like, there are some other Gigantamaxes that are, like, very clearly good that we'll get to in a second, but Lapras has probably the biggest buff of any Pokemon getting the new Gigantamax form, just because, you know, we already hinted at this earlier, Aurora Veil is, like, insanely good. Like, both screens at once while doing damage that no longer requires Hail to be up previously is crazy. If you're maxing Lapras now, you don't have to worry about conflicting weathers, because if you max Geyser, you're not going to cancel the rain out with max Hailstorm, because Resonance kind of takes that over. So a lot of good things Lapras gets here, and, you know, being an already bulky Pokemon, setting up Veil for yourself, and then having a couple more turns of max is really good.
All right, and I think this is kind of a pretty big generalization, is that sometimes you forget that ice is a really good offensive typing, yeah, just because of how bad a lot of ice types are because of their defensive typing.
Right.
But now we're giving Lapras, a Pokemon that was already bulky, a way to both double its HP and set up two screens for itself. So now that you don't really have to worry about the defensive liability of being an ice type anymore, you get to see how hard, especially +2 G-Max Resonance can hit, yeah, like the entire format.
And being an ice type that also beats fire types is really neat too.
Yeah, so super good Pokemon.
Yeah.
And the side proc weakness policy stuff is, in my opinion, the only way to run it. I know people are going to talk about, you know, light clay,
yeah,
options.
No,
but
I agree.
That's not something
you
I
get way more out of it
touch.
Otherwise, or with the weakness policy.
Definitely, definitely. Another Pokemon, and you know, in Series 2, I think it was actually a lot better than it got credit for. I think the immediate thought was to, you know, assign it as a cheese strategy. But anyway, this is Colossal.
On this podcast, we stand Colossal.
We stand Colossal, and I think it's legitimately good.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of hard to make an argument as to why I think it was good in Series 2, but I think it's much easier in Series 3.
Yes.
Because of how good Focalith is.
And it's the same kind of deal as Lapras. You're not going to have the competing weathers anymore, because you can max Flare for the Sun, you can max Focalith and not cancel out the Sun. And if you're Colossal, you kind of want the Sun out more than you want Sand up, because Sun like boosts one of your attacks, whereas Sand doesn't. And if you max Flare and then come out of it, and you're running Solar Beam, you can use Solar Beam afterwards, so it's cool.
And you should be running Solar Beam.
Yeah, yeah. It's a shame that it doesn't get like Power Gem or something, because you are restricted to running Ancient Power, which only gets you 120 max power, I think. But it's still good.
I
like
you, it. You can also run Rock Slide. I think Mixed Colossal.
That's
is
fair.
Cool,
yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Volcolith is essentially Rock type Wildfire. It's the same effect. You get the
1/6.
Yeah,
that I
yeah.
think it is
for
yeah,
a few
for
turns.
Four turns.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing about Colossal before we move on to the next Pokemon is that it's not a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
And I think people are going to start realizing that.
Thanks to Steam Engine being like as crazy as it is, you can like realistically run Colossal in Trick Room or with like Surf or something like that outside of Trick Room.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. I think it's going to be pretty good. The next one we wanted to talk about here is, you already are familiar with it, by Gigantamax Charizard now does finally have access to solar power,
yeah,
which is already giving rise to some pretty ridiculous teams that are based around Torkoal, Charizard, and Venusaur.
Yeah.
It's a lot of offense, and it's like, it's crazy because you're going to take this Wildfire, and then regardless of how well you take the Wildfire, which is not easy, You're going to take residual damage from getting blasted by this super powerful attack.
Yeah, like, Wildfire was already really good. Like, G-Max Herb was already really good. But this just kind of pushes it even further. At this point, that's I don't nuts. Think there's a reason to run Blaze. So you'd imagine that all of them are probably solar power. Even if there's no, like, sun setup, it's probably a better idea to take advantage of opposing sun in that case. But it's crazy. Like, people were already using Dynamax solar power, like not Gigantamax Charizard,
right?
Beforehand, because that's
so just smashing the two together is like as crazy as you would think it would
right.
be. The next two Pokemon kind of fall into the same category for me in that what they do doesn't really change,
mm-hmm.
but they did get a direct buff just on the chance that you do want to be Gigantamaxing them, and that's Hatterene and Grimmsnarl.
I am a massive G-Max Hatterene fan.
I think
it's really, really good. I think it's going to be insanely good on Trick Room teams. And this is another Pokemon that no longer can contradict itself with its max moves. So like before,
that was one of the worst parts about
it. Yeah, no, that made it harder to use in max form. But now you can Gigantamax Hatterene. I think Indeedee is like a very easy partner for it. And even if it's like an obvious partner, it's really good for a reason because you can set up Psychic Terrain. You can redirect to get Trick Room up. Max Mindstorms and Terrain hit crazy hard. G-Max Smite is really, really good. And it, like, again, it doesn't cancel out your Psychic Terrain anymore, which is great. Smite does a lot of damage and confuses both targets or both opposing Pokemon, which can buy you a lot of free turns. So I'm a big fan. Like, it's another Pokemon that has random access to a fire move like Togekiss, and Max Flare is a very good complement to Max Mindstorm and Smite. So a lot of good coverage there on Hatterene. I love it.
And it also gets the option to be a grass type.
yeah.
I know that, you know, what's it called? Gastrodon can kind of throw a wrench into the plans of a lot of hard Trick Room teams. I think it's, you know, I think the game plan against hard Trick Room for a lot of standard teams is to Dynamax Gastrodon.
Yeah.
And being able to use Max Overgrowth with Hatterene is a good way around that.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I unfairly to Hatterene lumped Grimmsnarl into this category because I think it's not really going to see a lot of play just because it's so good as a non-Dynamax Pokemon that I'm not sure it's been given enough reason to consider it as a Gigantamax Pokemon.
To me,
but the ability does have the potential to be kind of ridiculous. So it is an option as like a panic button in the same sense that Butterfree was in Series 2.
Yeah, to me, I think if you're running Grimmsnarl, like, there's never a reason not to at least use the G-Max form.
Right, it would just be G-Max, but you wouldn't necessarily be
using it. Yeah, yeah, it's kind of a last resort. You know, if you do want to max the Grimmsnarl, the sleep chance from G-Max Snooze is pretty good. But like, again, I don't think you'd ever build a team around purposefully maxing Grimmsnarl just because it does its other things a lot better.
Definitely. And Jake gave me a little bit of flack for this one, but I did.
You've been talking about this nonstop. Like,
in the relevant Gigantamaxes category, I did put Kingler in, and I think it definitely has the potential to be good. But because of how slow its base speed is, its base 75, it's hard to find an opportunity to use its max move effectively on turn one. So dropping your opponent's side of the field by two stages of speed is really cool. You can set up a lot of cool positions for the next turn after you use it, but it's going to be tough to take advantage of it dynamically, kind of like, you know, using Tailwind, Whimsicott, or something like that, which would be the ideal use of it.
Yeah, but then at that point, you don't even need the speed drops anymore if you're using Tailwind.
I wasn't talking about using it with Tailwind. I was just comparing it to Tailwind as far as like the way that it sets speed. Like, you would want to be using it that way, but it's still too slow to do.
Right. Okay, that's fair. Mm-hmm. I have nothing to say about Kingler. This was all Brendan.
I just like the design. He's got a big old bubble beard. All right. That's all the Gigantamaxes we want to talk about for now. But the moment you've been waiting for, Incineroar is a Pokemon that, against all odds, exists again.
Yeah.
I just still can't, like, believe. Like, what was the design thought behind, like, okay, we're going to start this format. Okay, let's go back before VGC.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to release this Dex, and we're going to have this handful of unreleased Pokemon, And the Alolan starters are going to be in it. Like, because reasons. We're going to have the starters for this generation. We're going to have the Kanto starters, of which we're only going to release one of to start, but the other ones will come along.
Right.
And the Alolan starters. How about the Alolan starters? I don't know why they... Right? We want the Alolan starters.
It's so random. There's not even, like, a lore reason as far as I can tell. I don't get it. I don't like it.
I don't understand. But anyway, in between generations, they somehow managed to buff Incineroar by giving it Parting Shot. It's back.
It's back and it's not going anywhere, and I'm not happy about it.
And it's like, good. It's gonna be what it always is.
Yeah.
What it always has been, which is a Pokemon that excels at slowing the pace of the game with the way that it has Fake Out, it has Intimidate, it has access to Snarl. And now, because reasons, it has Parting Shot, which just makes it better at what it does. And I just don't understand.
Yeah, it's kind of stupid. Like, Parting Shot was not necessary. It was already super good. It didn't need another buff. It also got Close Combat in case you're feeling frisky. But, like, Parting Shot is a more obvious one. I don't really know what to say other than, like, it's stupid good. Like, you can realistically run both U-Turn and Parting Shot on a set too, which gives you like even more flexibility, which is what it needed apparently. Like, it doesn't have knockoff anymore, which is kind of a nerf, but like that mini nerf is very far eclipsed by Parting Shot. And like, now it's in a meta that doesn't have restricteds anymore, so like, we were using it in 2019 when it was still on every team, and now you don't have to worry about getting water spouted, so it's even better.
Yeah, it's I just like can't believe that it exists. First of all, the thing that I'm having the hardest time getting over. But the good thing is that like, if you're familiar with playing against Incineroar, its play patterns haven't really changed.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a Pokemon that we're gonna expect to see Dynamaxing all that much, just because Max Flare is kind of like, eh. Do you really want to be using your Max Pokemon to use Max Flare and Max Darkness for a physical attack?
Right.
Probably not. If you did want to really get into the nitty-gritty of the potential that Incineroar has as a max Pokemon, it does have a lot of weaknesses, so it's probably a Pokemon that can viably run weakness policy. It does get access to Max Quake and Max Steel Spike and Max Knuckle. It has every freaking dumb move that it would want if you did want to take it in that direction.
Is that Iron Head?
I believe okay. So, yeah. I don't think it's Tail. I'm pretty sure it's Head. So it can run all of those things if that's a direction that you want to take it. But again, I think that it's still going to be best at just like doing what it's well known for.
Yeah.
On to the next Pokemon here that is at least a little bit more interesting as it pertains to the format, but does kind of bring back Sleep, which was something that had been a little bit less prevalent in this format than a lot of years past. I think that it got to a point, especially towards the end of the format, where people were like heavily anticipating the arrival of Venusaur and kind of Roserade usage spiking. And Roserade, you know, kind of did some interesting things in its own right, but Venusaur is kind of like a direct buff to that and everything except speed.
Yeah, now Venusaur is neat. It got some new tools, the Strand and Leaf Storm and Earth Power, which are both really good for it. Like I mentioned earlier, Sleep is kind of busted right now, and Venusaur is a pretty good user of it, and it combos super well with something like Charizard Torkoal too, so I imagine Venusaur will get a lot of usage, necessarily only on Sun teams, because I think it is usable in its own right, but certainly on those Sun teams as well.
Right, and I think it's kind of interesting in that it's a little bit less one-dimensional than it always mm-hmm. was. Especially in the Ultra format, or not even just the Ultra format, but throughout 2019, it was always a Sash user. It was always going to be, you know, abusing Chlorophyll to try and put things to sleep. And it was like using Grass Knot, and that was all it did. You didn't have to think about, you know, like what it was going to try and do to you. But now that it's in a format that's, you know, less offensive, it's not necessarily restricted to being a support Pokemon, mm-hmm. thanks to being able to Dynamax. It can do things like run a berry and, you know, be bulky. It can Dynamax and use Max Ooze and sweep you. people have been talking about using Growth on Venusaur, which is, you know, kind of an interesting option.
Yeah.
Because if you get it up and then you Dynamax, the game's probably over. and then in addition to that, it has the option to just kind of like be the suicide sleep user that it always was. So it's definitely, this is probably its best format.
Yeah, I could say so.
I think it probably is its best format. You know, there were a couple of weeks where the Mega was good in like 2014, but this is probably its best format. And given the dearth of grass types, you know, it's like that much better in that sense too. Cool Pokemon. Its partner Blastoise is one that we do have to talk about. Previously, it was kind of restricted in a lot of past formats to being like a water type fake out user. Like, that was kind of its thing. And then having access to Water Spout. But now, it has Shell Smash, which is, I think, a really cool buff to Blastoise, because Shell Smash Water Spout is like a really interesting niche.
Yeah, I'm not sure how good it's going to be still. Like,
but it's cool.
Yeah, no, it's certainly cool. But. It's still going to be kind of hard to pull off. There's a lot of spread in this format. When you Shell Smash, you're going to be like taking even more damage from those spread moves. If I have to like differentiate VGC and DOU in my head, because now Blastoise has Fake Out and Follow Me, which you can use in DOU, but obviously not in VGC. So, like, to me, that's its new niche, which is cool. But what would you say?
I said we'll never see that.
Yeah, no, never. It is neat that Blastoise does have Shell Smash. I don't really think it's going to be super impactful, but we'll see.
It's certainly an option. We did get two relevant Alolans. I'm trying to think if there was another one that I'm missing. Raichu wasn't added, right?
No, you can't get that.
I don't believe you can actually get it. But anyway, Alolan Persian and Alolan Ninetales were added to the format, and these two Pokemon are exactly the same thing that they've always been. But they both have very interesting roles that are going to definitely factor into the format here, I believe.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, Parting Shot is always a good move, and it never
fast
won't be.
Parting Shot, because remember, we have to specify fast now because Incineroar gets it.
Well, thank you. Fast Quash is neat. It is unfortunate that it's, like, 1 point slower than Whimsicott, which really probably isn't going anywhere either. But that's, like, a one downside to it. There are others as well. It's not going to be like a driving force in the format, I think, but it's certainly usable. Ninetales, meh. Like, we know Aurora Veil is good. Freeze Dry is a cool move in this format. Otherwise, again, I'm not sure what it offers. Vanillix might be a little bit better, I think, but
I kind of feel like Ninetales replaces the support Vanillix set.
Maybe.
Does it not? I don't know.
I don't know. Vanillix is
stronger. That's the way that I feel, but that this just could be like a past format bias, as like Ninetales was the Pokemon that always did it. But that was because Vanillix, I don't believe, had Aurora Veil until now. Is that
correct? Yeah, it got it in Gen 8.
This gen, yeah. So that was the difference. So you'll probably see that. The reason to run it now being if you need the fairy typing for anything, which is kind of interesting, and then you know the speed is obviously what sets it apart. Although it does speed tie with Durant, so. Beware of that. Wait, is it speed tie or is it 1 point slower? It ties, right? They're all 109.
It ties Kartana. Durant's 108, which is the same as like Terrakion.
Oh, Durant's 108, so it's a point faster than Durant.
Oh, I guess that's a niche.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of a niche. And then the last little bullet point that I have here as far as things that were added is titled fondly titled Meme Trash. And the three Pokemon that really jump out to me as far as meme trash goes are, first of all, Linoone. We did get Cantonian Linoone back, which is the Belly Drum Extreme Speeder that it's always been. That can be pretty scary, but perhaps not as good as it has. I say not as good. doesn't have as many opportunities as it did have in the past. Yeah. For kind of the same reason that Snorlax is struggling, is that +6 moves don't knock out Dynamax Pokemon. So it's going to struggle to do that. And then you can't really take advantage of extreme speed when you're Dynamaxed yourself. So you kind of lose out on both of those things. G-Max Flapple is, I guess, technically a direct buff to Flapple itself.
I mean, it's another one of those hustle users that, like, enjoys the perfect accuracy.
It doesn't really change the way the Pokemon works, but I guess if you are able to keep it around for more than three turns, then you get the advantage of having an accuracy buff from whatever it's, what is it called, sweetness or tartness?
I forget which one Flapple is.
I think Flapple's the tart one.
Okay.
G-Max tartness, is that what it's called? Or, I don't know.
Yeah.
G-Max sour heads.
Yeah.
Sour patch
G-Max,
kids.
What's the... Warheads. The
G-Max Warheads, yes, that's what I was thinking of. And then the last Pokemon that I fondly placed into this fondly titled category is Orbeetle. Orbeetle is kind of a weird one because I think that you like want it to be slow to pull off a lot of these strategies.
Why is that?
Of course, its max move sets gravity, so I feel like you would want it to like set Trick Room, and then you can max it, set gravity, and have some sort of like a spread sweeper next to you to do that sort of thing. But instead, it has like a middling speed,
it's
so
90,
you can't necessarily
right?
abuse. It's 90 or 80. 90.
I think it's 90.
I don't know if that's fast enough to really do what you want it to do.
You can run it next to Flapple.
Oh, but then Flapple can't Gigantamax.
But then it doesn't need to because you don't need the accuracy
boost. They can't both Gigantamax, Jake.
Whatever.
God. Anyway, meme trash. Like, we're not going to get into it too much because they all stink. Yeah. But they are going to have, you know, like niches that it's going to be important to be aware of because, you know, you're going to run into somebody in round one of a regional and you're going to get G-Max Gravity or whatever. What is it called? Gravitas?
I think so, yeah.
G-Max Gravitas. It is base 90 speed, so you're right. But yeah, so things to be aware of. meme trash. And now that we've kind of hit on a lot of things that happened in Series 2, a lot of things that were added in Series 3, let's talk about what that means for what is going to, you know, kind of be a lot of what's going on in early Series 3.
Mm-hmm.
So we've alluded to a sort of debate that has been raging on for years at this point that has now popped up again thanks to the introduction of Incineroar. But Incineroar versus Arcanine.
Yeah, I think this is less cut and dry than people might think. Like, when Incineroar is released, like, obviously Incineroar is good. Like, Incineroar is a very good Pokemon, and it will get a lot of usage, rightfully so. But I do think Arcanine still has use on some teams, because Fast Snarl and Fast Will-O-Wisp are both really valuable, and it's not something Incineroar can do itself. So if you're running a team that, you know, like, wants something like Will-O-Wisp or Snarl, and Intimidate, and you want to compress that into one Pokemon, then I think Arcanine might be the play. Incineroar, I think, has more support with, like, Fake Out and Pivoting, which, you know, it will deservedly get more use than Arcanine because of that, but I don't think you should count Arcanine out at all. It's the main point there.
Yeah, definitely. I think that in years past, when Arcanine was being run as, like, a bulky Pokemon and not utilizing its speed, that it was competing directly with Incineroar for a slot, and it was kind of hard to carve out a niche that was worth using it for.
Mm-hmm.
But now it definitely has a niche in being able to utilize its speed and be faster than a lot of the important threats in the format.
Yeah, definitely. I think you mentioned Durant being something Arcanine excelled against, and that doesn't really change. Like, Incineroar, I mean, it still has Intimidate, it's still a rock type, or not a rock type, a fire type, but it's still probably, I assume, gets knocked out by those -1 max moves. And it can't bypass redirection, because I don't know if it learns Heat Wave, and if it does, you're never running it anyway. It's like, there are certain things
probably
that Arcanine
does.
Still beats well. Excadrill is actually a good example, especially people are transitioning to Moldbreaker, which I think we're going to talk about in a second. That's something Arcanine outpaces, and that can flip a matchup there just based on that speed.
Definitely. Definitely, definitely, definitely. So let's move on to talking about the antithesis to these fire types, which is a lot of the water types that were good in Series 2. I think that, interestingly, Incineroar is going to lend some more weight to a lot of these water types. As now, you know, you're going to definitely see. I think there were, you know, teams that didn't necessarily run a fire type. But now that Incineroar is likely to find its way onto most teams that are looking for, you know, the things that it has to offer, you get to a situation where things like Gastrodon and Nastyplot Rotom get a little bit better than they were previously because of their ability to check Incineroar.
Something that was already on the upswing was Milotic, and I don't think that will be dropping. Like, Venusaur gives Milotic trouble, obviously, but Incineroar is, like, Milotic food. So I do think that's something that might keep seeing use. That I have, like, historically hated this set in DOU, but, like, Coil Hypnosis.
The Coil set?
Yeah, I hate it so much. But like now that it has muddy water, like it makes a little more sense because you can get those perfect accuracy muddy waters. And I keep saying sleep is broken, so I respect this set. I know it just won a regional, but it's one of the most like infuriating things to like see and watch and play against, just because it moves so slowly and it's so much of a momentum sink at times. But I don't know. But
that's what it's like designed to do. How do you feel about that compared with the Blunder Policy set?
Blunder Policy is no. Like, I would sooner use Coil than Blunder Policy.
Blunder Policy. It's such a cool item.
If only it wasn't too cool.
And then kind of the last Pokemon that I mentioned briefly is, I think, Gastrodon, which kind of got hit with a double-edged sword because obviously it is not going to be a large fan of Venusaur existing, but I think that kind of gives it... I thought a lot in Series 2 that it didn't really have a reason to be running Rindoberry.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's kind of its, like, spiritual item. So I think it probably gets a little bit better at using that in Series 3, and then obviously it's still an Incineroar deck. All right, so water types, of course, were good in Series 2 and will continue to be good in Series 3. Somehow we forgot to mention Sand as something that was good in Series 2, but definitely was, so let's add that. Let's pretend we talked about it already, so we'll get into it a little bit. And this is another kind of... we'll talk about it as a pair, right, with Excadrill. I say that all the time. Excadrill and Tyranitar that do kind of have, like, sort of a mixed bag interaction with Incineroar because they do have a type advantage as far as, like, attacking into it, but also Intimidate is not good for either of them, and it technically can hit Excadrill for super effective damage.
Yeah, I think that's up and down. You know, I do think Sand does better against Incineroar than Arcanine, mostly because of that speed thing I was talking about earlier, where if you're not in Sand, the Arcanine's going to be outspeeding you. The bad thing is that Incineroar does have Fake Out, which like is going to be preventing you from taking advantage of all those Sand turns. It can't really switch in on like ground moves from Excadrill or rock moves from Tyranitar super well, but if you get it in fresh, then that's when it can start doing some kind of pretty good disrupting against that kind of team. So like, it's up and down. I don't think Sand is going to change much in usage solely because of Incineroar, because it is kind of a lateral move from Arcanine, which wasn't ending its usage. But I mean, if we're just looking at results already, the Puerto Rico special event had 4 of the top 8 running T-Tar Excadrill, so it's not going anywhere, I don't think.
I think, what am I saying? The Venusaur sets up kind of an interesting interaction with Sand. We talked a little bit about the way that Incineroar interacts with it, but because Venusaur is on a lot of teams that are going to be competing weather-wise, like for people that are trying to activate Sun, you get into a situation where weather wars become a little bit more prevalent than they were in the last format. Venusaur, being a grass type, can obviously take a lot of the attacks that Excadrill is going to throw at it very well. It can hit Tyranitar for super effective damage, even though it's not doing a ton in the Sand.
Yeah.
It can put both to sleep, potentially, you know, because of how well it takes attacks from Excadrill, and then, you know, because of how squishy Excadrill is and it struggles to hit Venusaur with its stab moves. I think Venusaur, like, if you put Venusaur and Excadrill in a vacuum, Venusaur is going to win that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I agree.
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting addition to Sand, and like you said, Jake, I totally agree that it's still going to be around. I don't think it's going to take a hit in usage at all. Let's move on to Rhyperior, the other ground type in the format. It found itself on hard Trick Room teams a lot. It found itself as kind of like a secondary mode on teams a lot. And it, in the same way that Sand does, kind of interacts with Incineroar, at least in sort of like a lateral move, I think is the way you described it. I think that's a good way to talk about it. Is that obviously it does not like Intimidate. It does not like Fake Out being around to kind of burn Trick Room terms, but it does like hitting fire types with super effective
moves. Yeah, I think specifically with Rhyperior, it's that same kind of interaction where, you know, there's not much of a change. If anything, this might be like a good thing for Rhyperior, because Incineroar, while it does have access to Will-O-Wisp, almost never runs it, and so you don't have to worry about getting burned. But you do have to worry about Trick Room getting stalled out. I think for hard Trick Room in general, Incineroar is a bit of an issue. Like, Incineroar has been one of the best answers to hard Trick Room for a while, especially if hard TR is still running, like, Rhyperior, Torkoal as, like, the main sweepers, because you're resisting those eruptions. You can intimidate the Rhyperior. You can fake out stuff. Parting Shot makes it even better against Trick Room, because now if you pivot, you can lower their attack. And, like, hilariously, the setter that we were talking about earlier in Hatterene gets phased out if you Parting Shot it.
Yeah, I think that's a really funny attraction.
Yeah, it is. I think some people are starting to run Healer because of that, which I do too. But it's fine. So yeah, like, Hard TR, it's not gone. It, like, Incineroar doesn't invalidate it by any means, but it's a little bit trickier to use Hard Trick Room effectively when something like Rhyperior is in the format, because it is such a good pivot, and it's so good at buying turns for its teammates.
Right, so that said, you did mention Hatterene. Yeah. Hatterene is like a direct buff to Hard Trick Room comps that exist. Like, you can very easily take a lot of those Hard Trick Room teams, kind of like the one that Cypher won the New Jersey midseason with like Torkoal and Rhyperior, and then make Hatterene Gigantamax, and the team is just better. Like, you don't have to change anything else about it to just make Gigantamax Hatterene exist, and the team's better. So I think that's a really interesting interaction, and I think we touched on this briefly, but it seems kind of like Colossal is being underplayed as a potential Trick Room sweeper as well.
If I'm not mistaken, A-Drive had a Trick Room mode on his team that he cut with. Yeah, he had Dusclops. So I imagine Dusclops had a way to pop weakness policy.
Yeah, I think that's the correct way to run it. I think that having both options for it, if you want to build a team around it, is really cool, whether or not you're Aqua Jetting it or surfing it and then having the option to set up Trick Room, I think is correct. It's a Pokemon that just has all these like really good matchups that, you know, are, a lot of them are conditional, but it like hardwalls Togekiss, it hardwalls Charizard. So things like that it has going for it, and it's super bulky. So I think it's a cool Pokemon, and anyway, the reason that I bring it up is I think it can definitely slot into the Rhyperior slot on some Hard Trick Room teams, as far as like a rock type sweeper. It doesn't do quite as much damage, but it is bulky and gets access to like stab fire type moves, which is really cool. And then the last thing that I think, we've been talking a lot about, you know, things that sort of get hit on both sides as far as positives and negatives from the existence of Incineroar as we switch formats here. One of those interesting things to me is Durant. And in the same sense as Sand, it does not like to be intimidated, but it does get the option to hit Incineroar with super effective Max Quake, super effective Max Rockfall. So again, sort of like an interesting setup as we switch formats.
Yeah.
And it also kind of interacts uniquely with Lapras as well.
How's that?
Well, in that, like, both of them can hit each other pretty hard, but neither is, like, threatening a knockout. It's kind of like a weird...
Yeah, I true. I guess you're...
It's not very going very strongly one way or the other.
I think Durant, again, kind of isn't really affected too much. It's another one of those Pokemon that doesn't really care whether it's Arcanine or Incineroar. Like, it's still doing the same thing to that slot. Again, it might be another Pokemon that kind of prefers Incineroar to Arcanine because it's not going to get burned. Incineroar is probably running Flare Blitz. I do think Overheat's good, but until that catches on, I think Durant has way better physical defense than special defense. So if you're taking a Flare Blitz in max form, you're probably not getting like straight up knocked out. I think it's fine. Durant like stomps on Venusaur, which is good for it. Until the Venusaur is carrying Weather Ball, which I think we forgot to mention was another one of its buffs.
It does.
So Durant doesn't love facing Sun, because it is super weak to fire. Like, it's probably running Max Rockfall at this point.
A
lot of Charizard are running Chartiberry. Venusaur is going to be outspeeding you and either putting you to sleep or weatherballing you or something like that. The uptick in Sun isn't super great for Durant, but other than that, I think it's still very usable.
Yep, I agree. And just as a little bit of a parting shot here, we spent a lot of time talking about these two competing fire types and didn't even mention Torracat, Jake, which is sort of like the union of both of these two Pokemon, Incineroar and Arcanine. It's a lot faster. It gets Fake Out. It gets Parting Shot. And it's fast, right? Torracat? So Torracat's a Pokemon.
It is indeed a Pokemon.
But anyway, that's gonna be it for our little metagame discussion here. Of course, we don't know exactly how things are gonna shake out. We've already seen a lot of metagame shifts happen very quickly and I guess aggressively would be the way that I would describe it. You know, we saw Aaron and Wolf and Justin sort of like tear through Dallas, and then all of a sudden there was this brand new archetype that existed. Conkeldurr Jellicent entered the metagame. Life Orb Duraludon was all of a sudden the things. So, you know, we can very, you know, safely project some of the things that we think are going to be good from sitting in our chairs here. But there's really no way of knowing, especially when, you know, a lot of players have already shown the desire to kind of kick down and dirty with team building and shake things up instead of relying on things that have already been proven to be good. So it should be exciting. If the format starts to get away from you a little bit, just throw an Incineroar on your team. You can slow it down. But I think it's going to be good. I don't think it's as much, you know, doom and gloom as some people are painting it out to be. As much as I don't, you know, need Incineroar in my life. But anyway, it'll be fun. The first set of Series 3 locals, I believe, are coming up this weekend. So we'll start to see those results trickle in. Make sure you keep an eye on VGC stats if you're trying to find teams. And if you're also looking for Series 3 teams, of course, NPA, which is going on right now, is a good place to try and find, you know, what's going on in a format. So there you go. So we'll go into Jake's favorite segment here of the week, and I feel like I keep saying it that way. I don't hate music. Jake just likes.
I just love music. Yeah, this was like fully my idea, and I keep forcing it to happen, and it will always happen. So, hope you like music because I do. And so it's been a while. So we've had like a month in between podcasts, but there's been a lot of music I've been going back and forth between, but. I have been putting Lady Gaga's new single, Stupid Love, on repeat. It's very good. Yeah, I'm a big fan. I do think it's funny that she now has songs called Stupid Love and Bad Romance. And so I'm waiting for the third installment of the negative adjective plus synonym for affection trilogy. Maybe that'll come later.
Okay.
But other than that, Brennan and I are big Taylor Swift fans. If you haven't gleaned that yet, we kind of mention her off and on.
We are in this segment,
and I recently had a conversation with Brendan about how I thought Reputation was like just a bad album, and we were talking about like ranking all of her other albums, and I said Reputation was easily the worst. And then I decided to listen to it because I hadn't really given it like a super fair shake. I had only listened through it, I think, once, so I gave it another shot, and I like there are some good songs in there. So I've been listening to the album a lot. There are still some flops. Don't get me wrong, but there are some that I didn't give enough credit. Like I think. What was that? There was one I mentioned earlier.
You're talking about...
This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things. I love that song.
Yeah, it's fun.
There are some songs in the back end that I think are underrated, like Dress, I think, is a good one. It's cool. Mm-hmm. It's a fine album.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about that album, but I will refrain from getting into it too much. It's kind of funny how Jake's affection for Taylor Swift has sort of blossomed over the last year or so. Because he wasn't always this big of a Taylor Swift fan. I've been a Taylor Swift fan for a long time, but I like to take responsibility for part of Jake's Taylor Swift fandom.
Yeah.
And we definitely talked about Reputation, where the other day Jake was just like, Reputation sucks. And I was like, you know what, Jake? I used to think the same thing, but here's why I don't think that anymore. And he was like, you could be right. So now that he's sort of like undergone the same journey that I have as far as Taylor Swift's Reputation album, it's been a fun discussion that we've had. Okay, that was your second one. So the album that I've been listening to, and honestly, I was like going through a lot of the notes that we've had for all of the episodes that we've put up, and I can't remember whether or not I've talked about this at all. I feel like I might have, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. But there's a collaboration album that Sia and Diplo and Labyrinth put out called LSD that's really good. And the song that a lot of people know off of it is called Thunderclouds, which is Samsung Galaxy commercial or something like that. And there was a little bit of radio play, but I think the whole album is like really good and really interesting and not like a lot of, you know, things that I've heard because of like the uniqueness of the collaborators coming together. And it's not just like one song where you're like, oh, cool. Like, you know, the Chainsmokers had this, you know, fun artist on and the song is very good. It's like they got together and made an entire album, which is really, really neat. So I've been listening to that quite a bit this week.
Cool.
Okay, so that's going to do it for us here in episode 17. We are going to be continuing to pump out these bi-weekly episodes, assuming Jake can keep his things together. I'm kidding, Jake. I've like put you on blast a lot for this, but I totally respect your need to step away from school, and you all should.
Yeah, no, like I wanted to keep going, but like the first one we skipped was like the week after that New Jersey midseason, and I missed 2 days of work for that, and so I was kind of behind and had a lot going on that week. I came back, and then the next week that we missed was right before that big event of work I was talking about, and I don't have much time already, and so I was funneling a lot into that, and I didn't feel comfortable cutting the time out for that. So thanks for understanding. Obviously, biweekly is still our goal. It should be fine for the next few weeks or so. I'm probably defending my master's in May sometime, so that might get crazy. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah, definitely. So for just a sec, we're going to take a brief break before we come back to you with our episode wrap-up. So stay tuned for just a sec. Welcome back. Thanks for sticking with us. Again, this is going to be our wrap-up for episode 17, so thanks for coming by. This was one of those, I don't know, I guess they're relatively rare episodes where we do nothing but talk about Pokemon. so expect a return to some of our more diverse content as we continue to push through the 2020 season here. We'll continue to come back with you with guests and some topics that we come up with through our own creativity and ingenuity and, you know, general intelligence.
We so got a lot got of that
to look forward to.
yeah, we got some cool ideas with some cool guests that we've got cooking up. So hopefully those come to fruition. But now, thanks for listening. As always, you can find our socials in the description wherever you're listening. But they are at MrBDog46, at MajorBowman_, and of course at SoundproofCast. Oh, you have a VGC on yours, don't you?
I have the VGC.
Yeah, sorry.
I do have the MrBDog46 handle, but I do not use it. So
yeah, sorry. MrBDog46 VGC.
Just so we know. If you want to actually see me tweet, then use the VGC at the end.
The more important one is at SoundproofCast. That's where you can let us know how we're doing. You can tell us how great we are. If you tell us how bad we are, we'll just block you, so probably don't do that. But, you know, just in case.
If you just come to tell Jake how bad he is, I will block you. I'll make sure of that.
Good thing I can just change the passwords. I have power.
That's a he can. Okay. Well, anyway, thanks for staying with us through episode 17. We'll be back to you in 2 weeks with episode 18. So hopefully you're enjoying the 2020 season, and we will see you in 14 days.